It is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. Yes, we talk about food, glorious food, and anything really associated with food. Good morning, Arthur.
Like politics.
Yes. Well, yeah, politics can get
you. On election day, I was going to, but didn't, talk about how in old days, meaning early, you know, like 1800s, and into the end of the century, that century, communities used to give away food or booze to entice you to get to the election polls.
Well, out here, there's still some towns that have, separate from where the polls are, but they have election day breakfasts and lunches.
And that's in order to get you to the polls?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as prevalent as it used to be. But
yeah, actually,
still...
I have to say, in my neighborhood, I do believe everybody must be voting absentee because we used to be mobbed at the polls, but not anymore. There's so much other kinds. Anyway, I'm not doing politics today, but I am doing the holidays because, you're going to laugh, I just got my first shipment of new olive oil. From this, the two bottles I just got are from Sicily, and I'm expecting some more from Tuscany, and I'm hoping that my friend Massimino, when he comes to New York, is going to bring me some from Campania in the Salerno Hills. They make wonderful oil, and Cecilia and her family have their own oil. Anyway, olive oil, the new olive oil. On a gustatory note, is there can be have a bitter edge to it. I like that. It's more aggressive, let's say, in general, than oil that's a year old or 2 years old. By the way, if you look at a respectable label for olive oil, it should tell you until when it's good for, and it's 2 years they're allowed. So go back 2 years, and then you'll know when it was harvested. It is hard to find new olive oil here, as it was in ancient times, which is its connection to Hanukkah. The miracle of Hanukkah, the reason we have 8 days of celebration, is because after the Second Temple was desanctified by the Greek Syrians, we reclaimed it and rededicated it, and in order to get back on the path, so to speak, you had to keep the eternal light over the ark burning all the time. There was only enough oil, olive oil, I mean, that's the oil of the day in ancient times. Olive trees go back to the Bible, before the Bible. So olives... were the main source of oil, and it was going to take 8 days to get new oil. We're talking about really harvest time in a lot of places for olive oil is, in fact, November and December. I got my shipment of Sicilian new oil now only because it's much warmer in Sicily, and the harvest is usually in October. So now in December I can get oil. So anyway, in the ancient times, it was the same way. They had enough oil to burn for one night, but a miracle happened, and it stayed for 8 nights until they were able to get more oil. I learned about this not in Hebrew school. I learned about this in a storefront pop-up, we would say these days. In those days, we didn't have the expression pop-up, which in New York City means you rent temporarily and you do business temporarily out of a space that basically the landlord couldn't find anybody else to be in. Pop-ups often become permanent businesses. This was not. This was a storefront dedicated to explaining Hanukkah, and it was supported by the Chabad, which is a worldwide network of Hasidic Jews whose goal is to make other Jews who are less observant, more observant. So Chabad set up on Fifth Avenue in the middle of all those Christmas decorations, and they had a demonstration. In the front room was a lot of other displays and explanations and nice young men explaining things for you, but then there was a back room where they had set up an olive oil press to demonstrate how olive oil is made. Now, I knew how olive oil is made, but I never associated it with Hanukkah. It's the thing the rabbis didn't tell you when I was a kid. Now I'm able to buy new oil. And I like new oil for more than one reason. The primary reason is it tastes, I like that aggressive quality about it. And I have been having my oil on, just on toast. I have a little stovetop toaster, very primitive Italian gizmo, and I like, you know, I tend my toast on that, and then I put on some of my new oil and some salt. Interesting, the new oil, oh, so the reason I selected this oil, by the way, is somebody gave me, as a gift, a bottle of this oil, not new. You know, it wasn't old, but it wasn't because it was a new oil. And it's called, it's from the Monte Iblei, which is in southern Sicily, and it's called Frantoi. Now, in Italian, it's Frantoio, but in Sicilian, I suppose, because it's the brand name, is Frantoi, F-R-A-N-T-O-I, Cutrera, C-U-T-R-E-R-A. And I got a bottle. I really was impressed with the oil that I got as a gift. And so this year, when I was searching for new olive oil, I saw that the Frantoi Cutrera has this season's harvest. Now, that's going to be labeled. I don't know. Did I look? It's usually labeled with 2 years. So the last, it's going to say, you know, it's good until 2024. I want to have it in 2023. And you know, olive oil will keep for 2 years, but it sort of changes and fades a little bit as time goes on. You should keep it. I keep it at kitchen temperature, which is low 70s, unless the oven's on for a long time. But I go through oil pretty quick, and I don't store my oil in the kitchen. I just my working oil. And it should be in preferably a dark green bottle. A light green is okay. A clear bottle is no good. And truthfully, I buy oil in tins. I'm getting now a shipment of new oil from Tuscany, which will taste very different than the new oil from Sicily, by the way. It's going to be have more polyphenols, is that it? That's the antioxidant quality of really good extra virgin olive oil. What makes it extra virgin? I get that question all the time. What makes it extra virgin is a low acidity, and in order to get this low acidity, you have to crush and extract the oil immediately after harvest. So in a big olive grove, they will do it, you know, they'll take days and days to get all the olives out and into the olive press. And these days, most olives are not made in the way you think, the romantic screw press. They're crushed under stone, but then they're put into a centrifuge. And that's how the oil is extracted, by centrifugal force. And you can, I've watched this happen so many times. You can, it's just gorgeous to watch this oil come out of a centrifuge and pour into tanks of oil. And that oil is just, you know, you want to have it right then and there. And, it you know, well, most welcoming frantoios, they're called. Frantoi, I guess, is the plural, come to think of it. Anyway, the thing that to have is a slice of toast with the new oil on it, and in Tuscany, you can rub it with garlic or not, and you can put salt on it, and I like salt, and I like also a pinch of oregano sometimes, and this oil, this Frantoi Gutierrez, came with packets of what they're claiming is Sicilian oregano and salt. And I use regularly, my regular oregano is Sicilian oregano, and I use salt from Trapani, which is Sicily. I don't know. Their oregano had no flavor. My oregano is very fragrant. But that's a good thing to put on a piece of toast. Anyway, that's holiday note number one. There's so many things. Marshall, did I talk about the fruitcake, Sylvia Schur?
Yes.
I thought so, yes. So it's become so popular around here that I made it again. It reminded me that what I really... Now I've made it enough. I'm going to go back to the other holiday confection that is very similar that I made for years, and that is Aunt Delia's walnut date confection, I'll call it. Cake, you can call it if you want. Aunt Delia is Cecilia's Zia Delia, who died in her mid-90s a few years ago, but was cooking to the last. And when I had this at her house, of course, I had to get the recipe. And it's nothing. And it dawned on me as I was making the fruitcake that it's the same process as Zia Delia's walnut and date cake. But I made the walnut and date cake with other dried fruits. But this makes a more manageable quantity, let me say, because the fruitcake makes too much fruitcake. I wanted to bake it in small pans so that I could give it away, but in the end, I was nervous about how long to cook it, and I thought, let well enough alone. And you know what? It's best in thin slices. So anyway, Zia Delia's walnut and date cake, you mix 12 ounces of dried dates, pitted and cut into half-inch pieces. You got to cut up the dates. In fact, yeah, I think I want you to cut up the dates. But if you don't love dates, I would say don't make this recipe. On the other hand, you can make this with dried figs, if they're not super-duper dry figs, if they're moist dry figs. Or you can even do it with a mixture, including pitted prunes. I've made it with pitted prunes because there was a period where I always had prunes in the house. Let's not get into that. So it was easy for me to do. And also I had an excuse to eat it. This is not good for your blood sugar. Let me just say that. And then you need 12 ounces of walnuts. So 12 ounces of dried fruit, mainly dates, and 12 ounces of walnuts. Now, I make this recipe the way Tia Telia did. And she didn't take a knife and chop her walnuts. I love this process. She crushed them in her hand, little fistfuls of walnut halves, and she just broke them into pieces in her fist. So you have now chopped it, 12 ounces of chopped dates, 12 ounces of walnuts, toss it all together, then toss it in a quarter of a cup of flour, and then beat together 4 eggs, some vanilla, a teaspoon's probably enough for this amount, a teaspoon of vanilla, and 1.5 cups of sugar. So you want to beat the eggs with the sugar until they get nice and thick, and pour that over the floured nuts and dates, and mix it up well, and you're going to bake this. I bake this in a 7x11-inch baking pan, which sounds like a weirdo size, but it isn't. It's what they sometimes call a brownie pan. Why I have 2 or 3 of these in my closet, I don't know, because I rarely make brownies, but I do. And maybe I have made this in quantity, but I didn't go out and buy pans. Anyway, it doesn't have to be a metal pan. I also have a Pyrex pan, and they all seem to work well. However, this cake, in quotes, is so sticky. You have to be, what I would do is butter the pan and then fit some parchment paper into the pan. You don't have to fit it in because it won't just go flop in. But once you put your mixture of fruit and nuts with egg and flour in there, you'll be able to flatten that out, and it'll flatten out the parchment paper. And that's it. You bake it for 45 minutes in a 400-degree oven, and then let it cool in the pan, and if you've done the parchment paper, it should lift right out. And you could store it in aluminum foil, not plastic. By the way, the fruitcake that I've been making, it makes so much that I've had to keep it around, so to speak, and I have it in foil. What happens with when you wrap things in plastic, the air doesn't get to it at all, and you can get mold quicker. I just don't recommend it for moist things. I prefer, and baked goods, I prefer aluminum foil. Now, I don't know. We as a family, are Jewish. You know that, right? My niece, who's going to be 9 next week, asked not that long ago, are we Jewish? I said, well, I am. Your father is. Your mother is not. And she took that as a good answer. But they have since joined a synagogue, a temple, conservative temple. But they have a Christmas tree. So I said to Brian, that's my nephew, how come you still have a Christmas tree? And he said, I grew up with a Christmas tree. Well, I knew my sister never had a Christmas tree, but I'd forgotten that my sister and brother-in-law's best friends were Italian-American Catholics, and they had a Christmas tree. And they all used to get together on Christmas Eve to decorate the Capalbo's Christmas tree. And they sat around and ate Angela's eggnog. Now, Angela, besides being a wonderful cook and a wonderful decorator for holidays, has great appetite. And this is something, these days, I could only eat in a tiny amount, and Brian agreed. He could only eat this nowadays in a tiny amount. But it's so good, we're willing to make it just to have a tiny amount. So this is a spoonable eggnog, meaning it's got all the elements of eggnog, but it comes out more like custard fluff. You beat 4 egg yolks until, I would do this with a whisk, but you can do it with a hand mixer, it's easier. You beat the egg yolks, 4 egg yolks until they're, you're going to separate the eggs, obviously, put the whites aside for the moment, and then gradually beat in 1/2 cup of sugar, and I would say at least 1/8 teaspoon of salt, and just keep whisking until they're thick and lemon colored. Then you stir in 1/2 cup of rum. I would use nice golden rum, but I think any rum will do here. And then separately, you're going to beat the egg whites until they form stiff peaks and fold them into your egg yolk base. And then you're going to whip, believe it or not, 2 cups of heavy cream. It's going to come out a lot of whipped cream. And fold that into the egg white and egg yolk mixture. And you can keep it refrigerated for a day, but I, you know, try to eat it within hours. The longer it stands, the more separation you're going to get. Not that that's such a bad thing. But anyway, that was our family. Well, not my family, but half of my family's Christmas, nod to Christmas. This eggnog is a nod to Christmas. And I've been looking over the past year and thinking about, did I discover any new recipes or ways of cooking things, like of the year, kind of. And the only one, I'm going to have more next week, I do believe. But the one that I've made several times, and I never made it before, hadn't thought about this very clever thing, is Eric Kim. He's a writer for the New York Times. Eric Kim's chicken thighs with croutons and Thai butter sauce. Sounds complicated, but it's the easiest thing in the world, especially since, and I was drawn to it immediately because Eric cooks chicken exactly the way I cook chicken. You know, when somebody cooks exactly like you, there's a bond. Anyway, Eric roasts chicken thighs, salt and pepper well, brushed with olive oil on the skin side, at 450 degrees for 25 minutes. And here's the big thing that I never thought of. How did I not think of this? He puts in several, I would say 4 cups of croutons, broken up bread. Now, I've done this with dry bread, and I've done this with fresh bread, and I'll tell you, the fresh bread is much better, unless you have the teeth of a young person. I guarantee you will appreciate the softer crouton. So you put, once the chicken has cooked for 25 minutes, take it out of the oven, push it aside, and you should have a good puddle of fat, chicken fat. Delicious schmaltz, as even Eric Kim calls it. I love that he's a Korean guy who uses the word schmaltz in a sentence. So you toss your croutons in the schmaltz, in the baking sheet, and you put it back in the oven for another 15 minutes. If you can't help yourself, you can toss the croutons. I had a problem making this just the other day in that this chicken was strangely lean. And I really didn't have enough schmaltz in the pan after 25 minutes to coat my croutons, which were fewer than the ones I just made. I mean, maybe it was 4 cups at most. And so in the end, I had to drizzle a little olive oil over them because they have to be well-oiled, so to speak. And that recipe I make frequently now. So there are other things I do make frequently. I'm not sure I learned about it in 2022, but I do make fried rice cauliflower using cauliflower instead of rice. It's not exactly a catch-all for leftovers, but it is handy to know about, especially if you're doing a low-carb day and you don't want to have real rice. These days I indulge in a little rice, but it's maybe time to go back to no carbs. Now that I know how to do it. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, the cauliflower thing, there's so many people that don't understand that they make cauliflower pizza and everything like that. They don't understand. All it really does is reduce your carb intake. It does nothing with calories. I know people that are... cauliflower mashed potatoes. No. It's got as much, if not more, calories.
Well, I don't think it has more, but because I put plenty of butter and cream in my real mashed potatoes. But yes, I make the cauliflower mashed potatoes, but for a head of cauliflower, I use 4 ounces of Philadelphia cream cheese. And, you know, that's not without calories.
You know, that's the thing that gets
and butter. And I use a couple of tablespoons of butter, too.
Yeah, I mean...
So, yeah, you know, but look, it's if you're on it, as somebody who's experienced with this, if you want to be on a ketogenic diet, you really have to cut your carbs down to practically nothing. And you eat a lot of fat and some protein, which is why the perfect foods for a keto diet are chicken wings and bacon. And eggs are good, too, for extra protein. And then, of course, you want to have them scrambled or fried in butter. But then I can't have fried eggs when I'm keto because I have to have bread to mop up the yolk.
That's right.
Scrambled eggs, yes. Fried eggs, no.
You know, my grandmother got me to eat sunny side up eggs exactly that way, by putting toast underneath it.
Yes.
And as a kid,
your grandmother was a smart woman. I bet she buttered the toast too.
That's exactly right.
What could be better? Toast, butter, eggs.
It's like anything. It's just yeah.
Well, I'm busy eating toast with even better than butter. I have to say, some days I feel it is. With my new oil, and I also made a barley soup with what it is. As I made, you know, my new supermarket is carrying chicken backs for practically nothing, which encouraged me to always have a pot of broth on the stove. So I had a pot of broth, but I didn't have carrots and celery to put in it. So I just made it with just the chicken and an onion. However, then I said, you know what, but I'll dice up the normal soup vegetables and cook them in this nice broth, and it'll be like, you know, it'll be vegetable soup. And now I'll make it more substantial by adding some barley. Oh, I on sale the other day in the new, my neighbors keep saying, expensive market. I said, hey, let me tell you, they have some sales that are unbeatable. I bought a pound of white mushrooms for $2. Can't beat that around here anyway. So I threw that in. Anyway, long story short, I have wonderful mushroom barley soup. And that new oil was sensational on my mushroom barley soup. Just drizzled on top. The soup itself was practically fat-free. Not carbohydrate-free. Barley is a carbohydrate food. However, I have to say, barley is very good, excellent fiber and other things. And so it's a healthy carbohydrate. It's not like white bread.
All right.
Well, anyway. So here I have all this fruitcake in the house now. I have to find recipients. Everybody's scared of fruitcake, I find. I mean, I try to give it away. When yesterday I had friends here. I said, oh, take home some fruitcake. No. I said, come on.
It's like saying, take home some COVID. That's right.
You know, it's like, years and years ago, you know what Strega is?
No.
Strega is a liqueur made in outside Naples, in Avellino, in Benevento. That's the province just north of Naples. And Benevento was one of the last places in that neighborhood to be Christianized. There were still pagan rites being done in the 1700s. So the label of Strega, which means witch in Italian, Strega means witch, is a group of long-haired, blonde-looking women dancing around a fire. Anyway, Strega is this very strange liqueur made from a million zillion herbs in Benevento. And when I came after discovering it in Italy, it's very prominent flavor in Neapolitan desserts. So even if you don't drink it, you know, it's nice to have in the house to make this or that, like a ricotta cake with Strega. Mm. Anyway, I come back to the States, and I can't find it anywhere. So I actually find out who the distributor is, the importer and distributor, a woman in New Jersey, and she says, well, Strega is like fruitcake. Like, there's only really two fruitcakes in the world, and they just keep being passed around. Strega is like that. There are only really two bottles in the U.S., and they just keep being passed as a gift every Christmas. I have a bottle of Strega here, though. In honor of that story, I should probably make something. I even have a Strega cookbook.
I was going to say, you should make it and then let us know about it next week.
Well, the Strega cookbook is ridiculous. It's veal with Strega. I don't want liqueur on my veal cutlets. And it's not something they would ever make in Benevento, I guarantee you.
All right.
Well, anyway, next week it'll almost be Hanukkah.
That's right. Wow.
Yeah. Do you believe this?
No, I don't. This year's going by so unbelievably quick.
All right. So in honor of... Oh, by the way, the food tradition of Hanukkah is fried foods. And the reason is the oil.
Back to the oil.
It's back to the oil. Right. Now, to say, my grandma made potato latkes with chicken fat, is because in Eastern Europe you had chicken fat, you didn't have olive oil. It's the only reason. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Arthur. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio. And you can hear him also online, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.